Sean Dowdy, who is a GYN oncologist, the Mayo Clinic, the chief of GYN Onc, and the vice chair for the Department of Gynecology there, is going to share sort of the gynecologist perspective, because I think part of this has been a great experience for a lot of us, and even getting beyond our own little specialty silo, and how do we work with the how does the colon surgeon work with the bariatric surgeon, with the gynecologist? Because again, on the hospital side, we all share resources, so trying to think about this collectively, how it all fits together, I think has been a lot of fun. So excited to hear what Sean has to.
All right, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today. I don't have any conflicts other than being involved in this project, which I guess is a conflict. But the reason we're here today is because we recognize that implementation is very difficult. So you probably won't hear a lot of new data. This isn't about discovery. This is really about implementation. And certainly when I implemented enhanced recovery at my institution 8 years ago, I had a lot of challenges. You know, everything takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But when you're talking about practice change, there's a lot of other challenges in addition to that. The biggest one, I think, with perioperative recovery is tradition. So, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years. My patients do great. Why should I do anything differently? That's going to be the first thing you're up against. For me personally, my division was initially not interested in supporting this in 2008, and so I actually had to wait a couple years to wait for the right time for implementation. We implemented this in 2011. I didn't have any money to do this, I didn't have any time to do this, and we also had, we don't have any time to do anything anymore, but we also had a lot of challenges from anesthesiology as well. So one of our prior speakers had the acronym ENERGY. Our anesthesiologist came up with the acronym MAGIC, and they came up with that somewhat sarcastically because they didn't think any of this would work. But after we got them engaged, they're actually our biggest advocates, and I think anesthesiology is extremely important, so I'm glad we have a speaker on that today as well. So we overcame these challenges with a pretty broad stakeholder analysis. So this wasn't just surgeons, it included nurses. They were, again, some of our biggest advocates as well. We had anesthesiologists, residents and fellows, because they're really managing the patients on the floor. And the person here who's not listed here, who was really the tipping point for this, was the colorectal surgeon, the division chair, Dave Larson, because they had implemented this in colorectal surgery a few years before we did. So if there are gynecologic surgeons in the audience, great. I hope you can implement this. Otherwise, I'd hope that you can convince your colleagues in gynecologic surgery to implement this together with yourself, because a lot of the stakeholders are going to be identical between the surgical divisions. You'll have to engage anesthesiology, you'll have to work with nursing, and you may share some of these nurses as well as anesthesiologists across different surgical specialties. And they should be familiar with this. So we published these guidelines for the Enhanced Recovery After Surgery Society a few years ago. These were required reading for the maintenance of board certification in our specialty. They've been downloaded over 60,000 times. So this is one of the top downloaded articles in the history of our journal, Gynecologic Oncology. So most people should be familiar with this. And then we also published the systematic review a couple months ago for this AHRQ project. And it's interesting that we think of enhanced recovery as new, but if we look back in the literature, description of enhanced recovery was first really written about in 1899 in JAMA. And if you read this, they really talk about some of the same principles that we talk about today. This was written by Emil Reese in Chicago, and he even talks about that if he gets patients out of bed, they tend not to die of pulmonary embolism. So pretty good observation there. It only took us 100 years to rediscover this. And so, you know, if we take a step back and look at sort of basic tenets of surgical technique, I think if we all got together for 15 or 20 minutes, we could probably agree on some things. We might come up with something like this. I think we'd probably add some other things. But I don't think anybody would argue with the importance of anatomic dissection, tension-free anastomosis, and perfect hemostasis. But what we don't have is something similar for perioperative recovery. So I think one of the things we're trying to do with enhanced recovery is talk about what are the basic tenets of perioperative management, or ERAS. So as was talked about earlier with our previous speakers, this includes things like nutritional optimization, because great nutrition improves healing, leads to better outcomes. But this is not the only part of enhanced recovery. So when you hear people say that they're doing enhanced recovery and they're not, it's usually because they think enhanced recovery is just feeding patients earlier, and that is not the only thing that we're talking about. Our prior speaker, we just heard about opioid-sparing analgesia. You know, one of our primary charges as physicians is to ease suffering, but we need to do that with while at the same time minimizing opioids. And also euvolemia, so we don't want our pores to be too hot or too cold. We want just the right amount of fluids. And if you press me on it, I would consider euvolemia to really be the linchpin of enhanced recovery, because you can do all these other things, but if you give the patient lots of fluid, it's going to be very difficult for them to recover quickly. And I'll just spend one more slide talking about this. As much as we use fluids, I think few of us have a sense of how much sodium there is in some of these fluids. So if we look at lactated ringers, for instance, that's equivalent of about 30 to 35 bags of potato chips. And one of the reasons, the sodium load, not the fat, obviously, but that's one of the reasons we use lactated ringers, because if we look at the sodium content in normal saline, it's about 50 bags of potato chips. So you get 10 liters of fluid, that's like 500 bags of potato chips in terms of sodium load. So you wonder why patients' faces are swollen up, why they can't make a fist, and because their hands are so swollen up. And remember, if they look that bad on the outside, they're going to look that bad on the inside as well. So we shouldn't be surprised when those patients get ileus after surgery from all the edema, from all the bowel edema. So I just want to highlight that as particularly important. And we do this in all of our patients. So in gynecologic surgery, there's a big kind of difference between operations. I do gynecologic oncology, but we're comparing laparoscopic oophorectomy with excisions, but it's much easier to implement enhanced recovery across the entire specialty rather than try to pick and choose different procedures. So whether it's laparoscopy or laparotomy, whether we're talking about cancer, benign, radiation, non-radiated patients, they all get treated under the same enhanced recovery pathway. So I won't talk about all the specific parts of enhanced recovery, but there are three things that differ a little bit from colorectal surgery that I wanted to highlight. This includes omission of bowel prep, and just bear with me for a minute, because I'm gonna, this isn't antithesis of what you heard earlier. We don't use intrathecal analgesia, and we also use local wound injection. I've had very good results with that. So certainly in colorectal surgery, there's been a lot of evidence showing that bowel preps are helpful. If we narrow it down to the specific endpoints, it appears to reduce the anastomotic leak and surgical site infection. This is the case for colorectal surgery. It's not necessarily the case for hysterectomy. And so we haven't published this yet, but this is over 200,000 patients who had hysterectomy. We use the Optum Labs database for this. And you can see that there's no difference in surgical site infection rates and rates of anastomotic leak, whether it's for benign indications or malignant indications for hysterectomy. If anything, there's a slightly higher risk of surgical site infection, anastomotic leak, in those who got a bowel preparation. So I'm not here to convince you to stop using bowel preparations if you're a colorectal surgeon. I'm here to highlight some of the differences between gynecologic surgery and some of the other surgical specialties. There's certainly a lot of similarities with what we do with colorectal surgery, but there are some differences. The other thing is, if you're really worried about anastomotic leak and surgical site infection, there's other things you can do to reduce that. And so we had two other quality improvement projects. We had a 50% reduction in anastomotic leak rate from 3% to 1.5%. And we went from the 10th decile ranking in NISQIP down to the first decile for a surgical site infection rate, and we did that all without the use of bowel preparation. So we have not used bowel preparation since 2011. The second thing I want to talk about briefly is epidural analgesia. Certainly this is the gold standard for pain control. There's some evidence that it might improve ileus, although that's weakened in some recent studies. But we also had some concerns for our population, specifically patients with ovarian cancer. Just in the interest of euvolemia, this is problematic, because oftentimes you have to give the patients a large bolus of fluid because of hypotension. It's rarely associated with sedation and respiratory depression. We aggressively thromboprophylax our patients, because about 10 to 11% get a DVT or PE in the 3 months after surgery because they have high tumor burdens. And then it can potentially interfere with ambulation. About 30% of patients who get epidural in the literature are not efficacious, and there's also increased costs in operating room time. So this isn't something that we use in our enhanced recovery program. Just like bowel preparation, I'm not trying to convince you to stop using it. If you're using it, I'm suggesting that if you don't have a good epidural program currently, that's not something that you have to introduce to have a successful enhanced recovery program in gynecologic surgery. And I'd also suggest that there's other things that we can do to improve pain control. One of the things that we introduced recently was liposomal bupivacaine. Some of you may be familiar with this. This has a longer half-life. They claim up to 3 days, probably 2 days is a little more realistic. And we dilute that down to 180 cc's and inject that directly into the incision. And we've had very good results with this. So this is the results that we've had to date. If we start back in 2011, when we used what I'll call conservative management, our length of stay was 8 days, and about 100% of our patients were on a PCA. Now, this analysis is limited to patients with ovarian cancer who had a site reduction that included a colon resection, splenectomy, liver resection, or diaphragm resection. So these are the more complex operations through a full midline laparotomy. When we first implemented enhanced recovery in 2011, our length of stay went down by 3 days. Our PCA rate went down to 30%. We reduced the opioids used in the first 48 hours after surgery by 80%. We saved more than $750,000 in 6 months, and we maintained very good patient satisfaction. Then when we added liposomal bupivacaine as a local injection, our length of stay was the same. So we kind of kept our results with that, which was good. Our PCA rate went down to less than 5%. It's currently at about 2 to 3%, even with the laparotomy. So that's really something you don't usually need. We had another 50% reduction in opioid use. So we currently use 90% less opioids in the first 48 hours than we did in 2011. And with a cost analysis, adding liposomal bupivacaine was cost neutral because we didn't have to set up so many PCAs. And then we just finished our third iteration of this, and this was targeted to patients who had a large bowel resection. We had a one-day reduction in length of stay, which wasn't statistically significant, but what we did see was a statistically significant reduction in the variation of length of stay. And I think that was touched on by our prior speaker as well, is the more we can standardize, the less variation we have across the practice, and we remove those outliers in length of stay. Now, some of the other things we looked at were patient-reported outcomes. Actually, that you can't see that because it's in white, but this data is actually from Larissa Meyer and MD Anderson. And she looked at patient-reported outcomes, the top five symptoms that patients received after surgery. And if you look at open control versus enhanced recovery, the median number of days to return to low or no symptom burden was significantly less in patients managed under enhanced recovery. So for instance, fatigue, it went from 30 days to 9 days. So these are very significant improvements in patient-reported outcomes. Now, that is for laparotomy. If we look at minimally invasive surgery, not surprisingly, there's less gains to be had. That doesn't mean we can't implement it across the board. It's just that if a patient is going home the same day, we can't expect to improve their outcome that much compared to a patient who has laparotomy. So counterbalances, also important when you have a practice change. We had no change in pain scores despite using less opioids, no increase in post-operative complications. We're using a lot less fluid. We had no increase in hypotension and no increase in mortality or admission rates, and we preserved excellent patient satisfaction as far as pain control and nausea vomiting. Now, one of the specific things, again, that was touched on by one of the prior speakers is, does enhanced recovery increase acute kidney injury because we're giving less fluids and we're using more non-steroidals? This is over 500 patients who had ovarian cancer. You can see there's no increase in acute kidney injury, whether we use the KDIGO or NISQIP definition. Now, I also, very briefly before I finish, I want to talk again about the opioids, because this is one of the things that I didn't expect when we implemented enhanced recovery. You can see here in conservative management versus enhanced recovery 2.0, we used the equivalent of 47 tablets of oxycodone in the first 48 hours. That decreased to 5. So very significant reductions. And as important as these reductions are, at that point, we're really missing an opportunity to also tailor our outpatient prescriptions. And so in a series of publications, we also came up with some guidelines for all the surgical specialties. And in my division, we've reduced pills, you know, after surgery by about 40,000 since we implemented enhanced recovery. We save about 35,000 pills as far as outpatient prescriptions a year. And those findings really pale in comparison to what we see in the rest of the house of surgery. In orthopedic surgery, we'll save about 200,000 pills a year, and across the entire house of surgery at Mayo Clinic, we'll save up to 1.5 million pills a year, and that's just in one institution. So if we can implement this across a larger base of hospitals across the United States, you can imagine that we can save many, many millions of pills. So I think that is one of the, probably one of the most important things about enhanced recovery is once you set up these collaborations, the benefit is not just the perioperative recovery, the benefit is all the other things that you'll do with that team you've created for enhanced recovery. And these are examples of some of the other things that, that we've achieved since implementing enhanced recovery. I talked about anastomotic leak and surgical site infection. We also reduced our transfusion rate for patients with ovarian cancer by 72%, and we've done a number of other standardization, which I think has really improved patient outcomes. So in review, enhanced recovery lowers length of stay, reduces cost of care, and decreases opioid requirements. The stakeholder analysis is critical to implementation, and oftentimes it's similar across the surgical specialties. So it may not be a lot of extra work to implement across more than one surgical specialty. And also importantly, it can be leveraged to create a sustained culture of continuous improvement. Thank you very much.